Welcome to the Collective Intelligence Podcast from IPG. We deliver marketing insights that help modern brands thrive. In this episode, you'll hear about the latest perspectives featured at intelligence.interpublic.com. Listen, then log on to find new opportunities for your brand to stand out.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of CI Conversations. I'm your host, Jen Sain. I am so excited today because we're talking about AI agents and specifically how AI agents relate to the retail sector. In her thought leadership piece, Emily Wingert wrote, "Forget bots, the AI agents are coming." And in that piece, she explains why and how this move toward agent-like AI will impact the retail sector. For starters, retail customers, especially Gen Z and millennials, are already signaling interest in personal virtual shoppers and AI shopping assistants. So here to help us understand how AI agents will change the way we shop, I am so happy to warmly welcome a stellar panel of guests. And I would love it if you could each just take a moment to introduce yourselves to our listeners. Emily, if you could kick us off, that would be great.
Sure. Thanks for having me, Jen. I'm Emily Wingert. I lead experience innovation at Huge. I come from a creative background of user experience design and strategy. And now I kind of wear a lot of hats, really looking at how new technologies can impact our clients and businesses for growth and for transformation. And so I get the fun job of playing with the latest things all the time, which includes quite a bit of AI right now. So really pleased to be here and talk a bit more about this piece with these other lovely experts.
Awesome. Welcome. John, do you want to jump in?
Sure. Thanks. I'm John Hackett. I'm Vice President of Technology at Huge in Brooklyn. I work directly with Emily pretty much every day. My focus at Huge and just in my career has been emerging technologies. I've sort of always made it my ambition to sort of figure out anything that's new, upcoming, people haven't quite figured out yet. I like to get my hands dirty, rake it apart, figure out how it works, and then help clients apply that to their businesses.
Great. Welcome. Jason, why don't you go next?
Thanks so much for having me. I'm Jason Cooperberg. I'm the co-founder of a startup called Otherside AI. I like to say that we were doing generative AI before it was cool to do it. We function like an AI lab where we take these AI models, these complex AI concepts, and put them into products and experiences that the everyday person can use and benefit from. So we're best known for our HyperWrite platform, which started as an AI writing platform before ChatGPT or Bard existed. Today, that has a few million users. And we're working on a lot of really exciting initiatives in the AI agents space, which, of course, is the topic of our conversation today.
Fabulous. Thank you, Jason. Jennifer, do you prefer Jennifer or Jenny?
Jenny is great. Thank you. Hi, everyone. Thank you for having me. I'm Jenny Fleiss. I am co-founder of Rent the Runway. Thereafter, I joined Walmart and set up a retail tech incubator, launching their first business called Jet Black, which is conversational commerce, deploying text message to let people shop, and a lot of AI and machine learning that we started working on back in 2017. And for the last 6 years, I've been full-time on the investing and incubating front. So I'm currently a partner at Initialized Capital. I've done a bunch of angel investing and also some growth equity work along the way as well. One of the businesses I incubated is called Melody Arc, and it actually falls squarely in the AI agents category. So I'm really looking forward to this discussion today.
Fabulous. Well, thank you all again for being here. So I think a good place to start is, what do you mean when you say AI can be an agent? And how is that different from what many have already experienced with ChatGPT or with Google's Bard over this last year of AI discovery? If someone would like to jump in on that, that'd be great.
I can certainly start from kind of an article perspective and what I was really trying to unearth through the piece. What I was seeing out there, and I think it was last spring, where suddenly Agent GPT and Baby GPT came out, and they suddenly got this sort of spike in attention. And really what they were promising, although not completely delivering on, was this idea of task completion, being able to not just kind of generate an answer, which we'd all become enamored with thanks to OpenAI's ChatGPT or Midjourney's visualization tools and others, but rather being able to take a problem, atomize that into its micro steps, and then take those steps to achieve a task. And so a great example would be like ordering pizza or, you know, planning or even booking a trip and or calling a car to pick you up, right? These are great examples of tasks we do every day where we're forced to kind of engage through an interface to get those done. Wouldn't it be lovely if you could just tell AI you needed those things done and it knew you well enough to do them?
Okay, great. So what are the factors, do you all think, are driving this recent surge in interest or exploration of AI agents?
It's certainly been a really exciting year with the rise of ChatGPT. Although that had been in the works for a long time, it's becoming a lot more mainstream. And I think increasing the comfort that consumers and businesses have, as well as their expectation that they feel they have to play in this game and have a horse in the race on this front to deliver on the expectations that consumers will eventually have. And so there's just a ton more activity. As we think of, you know, the question you asked prior around agents, we're also at this really interesting point where being an agent requires not only communicating and understanding, but also doing things. The technology has gotten to a place where the doing of things can often be more efficient than many human-based instances, and where customers concurrently are building that trust. So it's a time for kind of action where these tools are actually faster in a lot of instances. And that's getting everyone to pay a lot of attention because it can save you a lot of resources as a consumer or for your business.
To bring it to a really kind of practical use case, when these AI agents first were introduced, we saw that folks were using products like ChatGPT to write drafts, draft email responses, blog posts, but they had limitations. And I was hearing this from some of our users all day long, right? These products were trained on large language models up until a specific date, but they didn't have access to live information. They didn't know the news of today, the new products that were coming out. And some of the initial AI agents gave access to those searches and started integrating those searches and that live information into the already promising results that we were seeing from early AI products. And then from there, of course, we go on to what Jenny and Emily were talking about, where it can actually take action. And those are some of the things that we're working on. There are two ways to think about this. An AI agent can have access to tools like search, like APIs, or you can actually have an AI use the interfaces that a human can use. So that's one of the ways that we're thinking about, which is how can an AI interact with your browser to accomplish a task for you?
I think another interesting factor that's helping these things move faster is just the digital maturity level of organizations, maturity around data practices and services within companies and respecting that and making those things available through APIs that are interoperable with products that are moving fast, right? I think that what's interesting about this transition versus mobile or ones before it is that a lot of the large tech companies have quickly operationalized platforms and services where companies can start to piece this stuff together if they already have mature data practices alive in their company. So I think that's one of the things that's also supercharging the speed here is just the data readiness and technology maturity in organizations has really evolved in the last, you know, 5 to 10 years versus the when iPhone came out and everyone was scrambling to catch up, right? So I think that's another big factor that's helping drive this forward.
So kind of bringing it back to retail, are retailers adequately equipped to embrace and integrate AI agents, or do you foresee potential challenges in adopting the tech on a larger scale?
I think there's an interesting two sides to this question. One is having, I'm going to call it agentic capability with as part of your offering as a retailer, something like what Jenny was working on with Walmart, I think is a great example of that, those beginnings. The other side of it, though, is the consumers being able to have their own agents that are doing work for them. And I think in both fronts, it's nascent. And I believe both sides are starting to emerge and embrace this. But just as an example of the first side, you can imagine the personal shopper agent that you would want to offer based on your assortment of products, especially if you have a more complex data set. We saw Walmart release a new search capability that's much more dynamic and built around need state. That to me is an incremental step towards agent-like support for your shopping needs. But on the consumer side, and this is where some of the examples that I discovered when I was talking to Jason and getting to know the HyperWrite product that OtherSide offers is quite interesting, is the consumer being able to game systems maybe in new ways. So if they have an agent that can go on the hunt for price matching when they buy a product, and be able to then reach out to a business and say, hey, this product went on sale for lower over here and you have a price match promise. And my agent found, I mean, they don't even have to reveal that, but you can imagine that we have policies today that are built on the expectation that a human may not take time to do it. And all of a sudden, if they're enabling their own agents, and because of the way AI is working as sort of text to code or text to capability, there's really a window here where the consumers start to have technology working on their behalf. And in that front, I don't think retailers are ready at all, because that's really thinking through. It used to be, unless you built it, no one had that tech. And nowadays, I think that's starting, that power dynamic is shifting. So in my view, both sides aren't quite there yet. It's not an immediate pressure, but there'll be a lot of challenges as both sides gain in maturity on how this really transforms how we behave and even what your business policies are and how you think about these things.
I really like the way, Emily, that you framed it. You know, I agree that there's not perfect readiness. We're in this kind of in-between state where there's a lot of exciting technology out there that I think retailers are starting to understand. They're understanding more of the technology. They're understanding more of the fact that they need to find a way to play in this space. And yet many of their systems, their teams, their protocols might not be as flexible and based to incorporate that. And I think similarly, consumers are kind of in this in-between state where they're like curious about all this technology. They're playing around with it, but they haven't fully started to implement it into their day-to-day in ways that can save a lot of time. And as we think of just the word agent generally, I mean, an agent is someone who can do things on your behalf and who saves you time thereby, right? And otherwise, if something is not saving you time, you probably won't adopt it either as a business or a consumer. And I think the way that I'm most optimistic about both the business side of retailers as well as consumers integrating AI is operationally. So if they can take not just one-off requests and searches, but kind of operational practices and systems that they may apply, whether it's, okay, when I shop, I always filter by these brands, I always filter by these sizes, and I always look for the best promo code, apply that logic every single time I shop and check out. Like, that's in a way that can create a ton of efficiency for me again and again and again, versus kind of these one-off use cases, which is, I think, how a lot of people today have been deploying things like ChatGPT and playing around with this technology. And I'd say that similarly on the business side, on the retailer side, can you think of any operational flow and processes that are somewhat repetitive in your business and use that as a jumping off point to optimize the impact and abilities of AI agents?
Jenny, I love that. I like to say that we are not just building AI products as a company, but we are building a company using AI. So we've built a number of internal AI powered systems and agents to help with our support channels, for example, right? That's a really great way to integrate AI today. You also touched on this aspect of personalization, where the system, whether it's your personal assistant or the assistant within a specific website or retailer, knows your preferences, it learns from you, and it can serve up these personalized suggestions, experiences for you. And I think that's where retailers and brands are best suited to use AI. What do you know about your customer? You have the expertise of knowing your users. How can you provide them an even better experience than you already have been providing? Rather than just saying AI is this hot new thing, how can we slap it on? How can we actually focus on the customer?
With the ability existing, though, for anyone to build an agent without coding, do you see shopping agents becoming in the future table stakes for the retail industry?
I think we're definitely headed in that direction, though it's certainly early. One of the things I think about a lot is that little support bot that's in the bottom right-hand corner of so many websites. At first, it was very rules-based, right? It could answer common questions, support tickets that were commonly received. It could provide those answers. Then as we started integrating ChatGPT into that, it could be a little more flexible. And now with AI agents, there's even more flexibility, right? So we think about that personalization. If someone's using that bottom right-hand corner assistant as a shopping assistant, it has your preferences and needs. And instead of just returning information to you, what if it can actually take you within the website to the product that best suits your needs? So that's one of the things that I'm excited about. And I think one of the first really repeatable ways that brands and companies will be able to integrate these agents into their own sites and experiences.
I think that it is really accessible technology, right? You don't necessarily need a software engineering degree to be able to work with it, which is exciting for someone that has an idea to get in there and prototype and then really sell through to the rest of their organization the value of something. I think this, the flip side of that, though, is as well as is you should really be considered and have a strategy around it. Because I could see someone maybe slapping something together without really thinking it through or fully understanding the consumer experience or tailoring it in the right way, and then trying it out and maybe it being a false negative, right? Like they're like, oh, this doesn't work. And that's also something I want to caution people against, is that you need to really be considered and think about how people are using it and for it to drive value versus just quickly slapping it onto a website, which I'm sure folks are going to do, but I'd caution people against doing that without a lot of consideration upfront.
John, that reminds me of an example, a cautionary tale, if you will, that I remember that went viral, I think in December, toward the end of last year, where a car dealership had integrated an AI chatbot, and essentially someone was able to prompt inject or trick the AI into selling them a car for $1, right? So that's an example of perhaps slapping AI onto something too soon, someone's able to trick it, take advantage of it, and a bit of a PR nightmare.
I think it's interesting too. You brought up, Jason, the lower right-hand corner bot, you know, the sort of, I guess we can call it a modern day Clippy. And I've learned as a consumer not to click on those because the experience behind it is often so stilted and awkward. And if my conversation's complex enough, or my question rather is complex enough, then I'm like, oh, no, that'll never help me, you know, and you have these kind of aversions to it. And I think what'll be interesting in the next 12 months is the retraining that could happen with consumers. How do you trigger or signal that your capability as a brand is actually improved, right? That you actually can do more with that space. And so what I think is intriguing is maybe it doesn't have to live in the lower right-hand corner of the screen any longer. You know, we need new homes for this stuff, new, richer and deeper integration points. I think that's where, at least for commerce, the search bar is a significant one, where we've been typing in a search bar for ages. Why isn't that just the beginning of a conversation? And that's where I think we can learn that brands are actually offering you something new and better because we stumble into it in new ways and not rely on those little lower right-hand corners. Not to say that they won't to transform, but rather there's going to be a legacy of avoidance that we'll be overcoming, I think, as we bring better and better experiences into those spaces.
I think that's so interesting, Emily, this aspect of whether it's mistrust or expectation that it won't actually be more efficient to look at that bot on the lower right-hand corner. The place where I'm the most optimistic about that is the way that I worked on this business that I incubated, Melody Arc, which is focused on customer service, you know, which some others have focused on as an area that many people have used as a starting place for where do you inject AI agents. But the theory here was, can we let consumers in the way that they prefer to actually handle customer service via email, be it a phone call, sometimes chat? Can we let them use their natural happy path, but behind the scenes with the operational flows, can we inject AI? And can we use a combination of AI and agents so that customers avoid more quickly than often is the case that frustrating, mechanical, not helpful, I can't answer your question, only pick from one of these four options that we often get used to in a traditional bot-based interface, and to let you speak, you know, capture data, but also just speak in a much more free language way. And I think that's where the right level of both customer trust and efficiency, the ability to kind of regain and build the trust around using some of these systems as actually being a faster mechanism from consumers is the most powerful. Like, I think that's where we're at right now. Like, let's avoid the hallucinations and, you know, try to make sure we shelter both our businesses and our customers from that. Let's also have the right level of protecting our customer relationships. Like, I think that's the other thing, which is often really undervalued, is like, if you put this technology out there and it's not ready, the interactions you're having, especially in the world of something like customer service, with a person you've already like maybe built trust from, you would like them to be a repeat customer, you're trying to convert them the first time, maybe you've paid to acquire them, and therefore like your CAC is at stake. Now, if you expose them to an experience that's pretty frustrating, that's like a reflection of your brand. So I think it's like, right now where the technology is, you need those layers of a combination of like AI and some form of an agent that's following and partnering with those operational AI rules.
Yeah. I mean, if anyone else has any thoughts in terms of building strong relationships between retailers and their consumers, you know, I imagine being able to buy a car for a dollar is not the way to do that, to have a good relationship or, you know, equal balance on both sides.
Pretty good relationship with the consumer. They're pretty safe.
That is true. Yeah. So anything else about building strong relationships and or kind of that balance between convenience and the human-like experience that Jenny was just talking about?
You know, there's been a long time realization in the UX community that I think really applies here, which is that it actually isn't about the amount of time spent, it's about the perception of the amount of time spent that matters. And I think that's where having interactions that are more positive and more joyful can change your perception of how that felt. And so I do think sometimes when businesses are so focused on efficiency and they're trying to get, for example, customer service calls to be as short as possible because it costs them money for that agent to be on the phone. If you are augmenting that or creating more of a hybrid, like Jenny's referencing, a hybrid combination, then do you change the cost calculus where actually spending more time with someone, but inside of maybe more of an AI instance, that actually that investment could be valued by the customer, that they're not being rushed through, you know, that they're, which makes me think, of course, of doctor's offices as well. Medicine needs this adjustment too. It's like, where can we use this to buy ourselves time, to slow ourselves down and enjoy a slower life inside of these capabilities? And I think sometimes I'm a little too dreamy about this topic. And, you know, it's feels like we're just in full acceleration all the time. But I do think that there could be value between a brand and a customer when the brand actually enables the customer to relax more, to spend more time that's higher quality, to not get stressed and anxious first, right? And so wherever that's possible to sort of disarm that anxiety, which I do think sometimes means giving space and time. You know, is there a way in which AI actually brings that to the table where you're kind of okay that it's not a human, but because you're getting really true conversation that's giving you the answers you need at the pace you need it. And this is where personalization comes in, you know, in the language that you need it in, at the reading level that you're at, for instance, you know, just all the dynamism that can come with this that makes this truly a real-time experience and not always this sort of pre-programmed deterministic experiences that have been required previously for businesses to offer.
I love that. I find that fascinating. It's almost if you like leapfrog and you think two steps ahead of like, once this technology becomes table stakes for retailers and for people, and we have like maximum efficiency possible, it's like, well, then what are the differentiators? And it's like, if you look at like the way humans and human nature is built, like we are built for some amount of wanting to like enjoy our time and our experiences and our connectivity with people. And, you know, we crave that interaction, especially in a world that's become more and more virtual with our work environments and such. And when you think of businesses, like, it's always interesting for me, Zappos and Chewy, as two businesses that kind of turned the traditional customer service type experience on their head in like really simple ways. They were kind of like, you can just call us if you want, and we'll talk to you as long as you want. And you hear these wild stories of people who spent, you know, over a day on the phone with an agent on the extreme, but like their differentiator became like, oh, these are categories that are really like high consideration or meaningful. And we can differentiate ourselves by providing that outlet for that connection and connectivity. So not that that is the perfect way to execute in this world, but it's like finding that happy place of acknowledging there are human needs beyond like, let me just execute and get this done. It varies for different people, but there might be a wedge ultimately of finding that right way to offer people enjoyable experiences beyond just let me get this done experiences.
So a couple of you have kind of sprinkled in some examples here and there, but I would love it if there are any live now use cases where AI agents are already making a significant impact in the retail space. Everyone loves a good example or case study.
Jason, something you called out to me when we were talking for the piece was around credit card optimization. I'm curious if you're still seeing that use case for your product and really what you're seeing from folks on that side, because I think commerce and finance are actually pretty closely tied here.
Yeah, definitely. I would say as far as our assistant is concerned, we're definitely still in that early stage where it's experimental, where people are using it to, I had a great example the other day where someone used it to book a workout class that they wanted to attend. But when you speak to the credit card point optimization, or we spoke earlier about finding the best price, that's a really great example because an AI system can go out there, find that book that you want, that shirt that you want available. available in 5 different places, 5 different websites, identify which is going to be the cheapest, which is going to be the best option for you. That is definitely a place today where we are seeing the impact.
So kind of taking it beyond retail, are there any other industries that you foresee standing to gain the most from this technology? And are there any particular companies or industries that really stand out as successful early adopters?
An area that intrigues me, and I've had many discussions with folks on in this particular vein, and I think it makes sense because it's, I think where this technology is really great is dealing with complex, tedious information is the legal law industry, right? I think that's going to be really intriguing because it's so, the cognitive load is so high, it's so jargon ridden, it's so complex that your average everyday person struggles to navigate it and understand it. And I think it's going to help really shift and make that a much more accessible and universal way to interact in that field. But I think it's also going to shift that industry. And I think Emily, you and I were at a talk, I think some months ago, where we heard someone from the legal field say that he was very excited, which surprised me because I thought that they might be a little bit hesitant. And he was seeing it from this point of view of, it's going to make my job faster, so I'll be able to service more people. And he kind of took it on this accessibility angle, which I thought was really interesting. So he's like, you know, instead of spending like, you know, 100 hours on something, it might take me like 2. And that shifts the type of customer that I can support, right? It's like the costs then would come really down. And he's not seeing that as like cutting into his business. He sees that as opening up his business and making his legal services far accessible at a lower price point to a wider audience, which I thought was a very interesting angle. So I think like that industry in particular is going to be really fascinating to watch how that shifts that. And I'm sure there'll also be quite a bit of resistance and hiccups in there as well. And Emily, you called out healthcare. I know that's one that I think is particularly interesting to watch as well, because it is, again, very jargon, very complex.
No, healthcare or legal stuff for that matter, I think also have in common, yes, this thing that you don't really want to spend time on as a consumer. But there's also this intersection of like, it can be very costly, right? Like, so the stakes are very high, the costs of legal services, the cost of your time on healthcare, but also like the costs related to like the rebates you may or may not get on insurance, like it makes the need that much more painful. So you have on the one side, I think industries where you have on the one side, the tasks that are easily operational, automatable, repetitive are also not enjoyable or painful for consumers, and then can be really expensive and high stakes. That's kind of the sweet spot where we're starting to see some traction and where I think you'll see more things unfolding.
I'm really excited about the engineering space, the technical side of things, right? We're seeing so many tools that software engineers are using. Every single engineer on our team uses a few different AI tools and agents to develop our products. So this ties into that operational side of things. There are so many opportunities to be more efficient, to work through ideas, to have that extra teammate or that extra partner on your team, on your side, whether it's to talk through a problem, to create something for you. And that's what I'm really excited about, these small teams that can do so much more because of AI.
One of the things I've been contemplating, and I don't have the answer, it's just in the employment space, is there, are employers going to offer up that array of agent AIs that can help with your task achievement? Or is that buddy, somebody you bring with you into an employment relationship where you've tuned an agent to know you well and how you work? I think about calendar optimization, you know, could you have an agent that's able to recognize when you just need kind of, or where you could signal to it, I need some downtime or I need some deeper thinking time, and it actually kind of manages your work life a bit to cater to how you work. And I think we all do have different ways. You know, are you a morning person? Are you a night person? When do you hit your sweet spot? When do you need deep thinking time? Like, is there a future where not only do I get the sort of AI tools my employer brings me, where it's built off their data and their business insight and things like that, but am I bringing with me kind of an assistant as well that's optimized to me and how I work? And does that part become part of my pitch for, you know, why you should hire me, for example? I think I'm a little ahead of real life here. You know, I don't know that anyone's doing this today, but I do find that topic quite interesting, you know, where it's the same topic as do the retailers offer the agents or do the consumers come with one? It really is, I think, a new horizon when it's a both and, you know, future.
No, I think that's an interesting idea. I think also just from coming from an IT person at an organization, it also opens up like a Pandora's box of questions I have around protecting IP and legal concerns. But I do think some version of something like that will be there. I kind of look at it like, you know, you bring your own cell phone or device to work sometimes, but work also provides those devices. And there probably needs to be some sort of separation of concerns there around where the data portability and like what memory that thing has when it walks, when you walk away from the job, like what is it, what does it take with you? What, you know, the next job and where is the line for corporate IP there, which I'm sure someone will figure out at some point. But I do believe that it will be imperative for organizations to have these tools as part of the suite of tools they offer their employees just to get work done. I think it's going to be as essential as providing people with email, right? You know, I think, Jason, you mentioned, tools for engineering. We are enabling like GitHub Copilot in a very like controlled way for our technology team on specific projects to see where it can kind of improve. But I think across the org, I think there'll be different types of agents or tools that are agentic, as you've said, Emily, that will become critical for companies to deploy for their organization, depending on the different needs. And I think it'll be one of those things that separates companies that really take off and excel from those that lag behind is adopting those types of tools internally, either homegrown or off the shelf they get from somebody like, you know, Google or Microsoft.
I've often found that these earlier stage, smaller companies are more willing and able to adopt new technologies earlier because maybe there's less legal to work through, less rules in place, right? They can take these risks. And I'm excited about the opportunity that that provides for whether it's a smaller brand or retail company or a technology startup to compete with some of these big players because they can take those risks and try the new things. Looking out into the far out future, I was thinking about this as Emily was speaking. What does it look like? Imagine this future where we each have our own agent, our own personal assistant, but they also can interact with each other. So it knows our preferences and then it can compare my calendar and scheduling preferences to Emily's calendar and scheduling preferences and do that scheduling and set up something that's going to be optimal for the both of us. And then imagine scaling that up to an entire team, an organization, a company. And AI is just so good at recognizing patterns and noticing things that a human might not be able to, especially at scale. So yes, it's going to be a bit of time before we get there, but these are the things that we think about, and these are the things that I'm excited to be building towards.
Yeah, I think a fun kind of thing in that category, in that bucket, taken to an extreme, I know someone who is working on that related to the dating industry. And just thinking about if you had an agent on your behalf who knew your preferences and kind of some of the basic way you like to converse back and forth, would it be more efficient to just have one person's agent communicate with another person's agent for some period of time before there was a likely enough chance of a match to merit an in-person meeting or something like that? So it's just fun to think of like all the categories and industries, like where would this work and where is it taking technology kind of too far?
I love that. This sort of digital matchmaker even who's kind of, you know, advocates on your behalf for the things that and keeps you away from maybe what your weaknesses.
So we're talking a lot about these, you know, consumer retailer relationships and capabilities within different industries, from legal, which is perhaps not the super personal, to even potentially dating. So there's a lot of personal information and, you know, that kind of stuff floating around. So with that in mind, can you all talk about security or privacy in terms of these innovations?
I can jump in on that one. I think, you know, with any new technology, often things move really fast, right? I think what's interesting about AI is, unlike a lot of other technologies, I think really quickly we started talking about regulation, security, and privacy versus a lot of other patterns with technologies evolving. Is something goes terribly wrong and then you start to talk about that stuff and start to make pivots. So I think at least I'm feeling a little bit better about us being early in those conversations now and being being more mindful of them. However, I still think that, like, you know, when people move quick and really, really, really fast, sometimes things get overlooked, or you don't figure out that something's a concern until it's out in the real world. I do want to just say, I think that what's unique here is I see like a more of a concern around it than in other industries. Although I think we probably don't want to repeat all the mishaps that went on with social media with artificial intelligence. So I think it's higher stakes. I do think that there's like with any technology, there's a lot of upstarts and they're not maybe so mature. Like, for instance, OpenAI is a relatively new company. They're not, you know, within a larger tried and true organization. So I think that, like, they may have to learn the hard way some things that Google learned the hard way, you know, quite a long time ago. And so I think that's going to be something that we'll see is, you know, whether or not OpenAI and some of the newer companies that haven't been through the ringer as much, do they kind of see what happened in past iterations and really come to the market with really smart concerns around security and privacy? I think Google, at least, and Microsoft, all that's kind of core to their business is being concerned around security and privacy. They do business with very large organizations that have very high InfoSec standards, right? So I think when they're putting out products in this space, they're going to be more secure and more private, and, you know, based on just it being built on the infrastructure that already supports that. I think smaller companies, little nimbler ones that are actually doing a lot of very fast and innovative stuff, and I think Jason, you've made this point, is that, you know, they tend to move very, very quickly and get less bogged down by the legal and the risk concerns, which is great for innovating and moving fast. But by way of that, you know, that opens up opportunity for things to go wrong a little bit later. So it's sort of, I think my prediction is that the concerns around that stuff, and I think the questions being asked as companies start to enable this stuff, will force those smaller folks to really shore up any security, privacy, and InfoSec concerns in their product roadmap going forward. But I also think it might make people lean into some of the bigger, more tried and true partners like a Google, a Microsoft, Meta, or even what Apple's working on. I don't know if anyone else has any thoughts on that regarding security and privacy. I really looked at it from an IT person's point of view, so I'd love to hear other people's thoughts.
There are definitely still a lot of questions to be answered and unknowns when it comes to this, right? I speak with lawyers all the time. We talk about IP and data privacy when it comes to training these models, right? A lot of those questions are still out there and haven't really been proven out. At the end of the day, as I'm designing, as I'm thinking about building products, I just keep at the front of my mind this concept of privacy by design, right? How do, from the moment you're ideating and building a product or an experience, keep the privacy, data, and any information about your users safe and secure? And if you are always keeping that in mind, I think that's you're setting yourself up to be in the best place. And then as more of these questions are answered, we can continue to improve upon our processes.
Yeah, I think one thing that gives me hope thinking about it from the consumer lens is, like, I do think we're at a place where consumers are willing to trade privacy for efficiency, and questions around like how far that pendulum can swing, and maybe there's backlash at some point. But I think there's a lot more kind of open-mindedness and willingness on that front than we've ever had before, and in kind of balancing that trade-off. And, you know, related to that, I think like Coinbase is kind of an interesting example, right? Where you have a lot of people who invest and put money, which is in theory like one of your most prized assets, in this system that is very subject to like certain aspects of security risk and fraudulent behavior. And you hear like a million stories. I went through an instance, and yet like a lot of people are, you know, engaging and doing it. And, you know, it's accepted, like, this is going to be a thing of the future. And so it's more about like, how can we build the right precautions or independent awareness around it? But the world is moving forward in this direction. And so it's somewhat inevitable.
There's an interesting implication there around if attention is what we have sought for years as businesses, getting consumer attention, and you ended up with social media and the impressions economy. Are we moving more towards an economy around your data? I mean, that's always actually been underlying all of that, but is it the thirst for data right now is almost palpable? Everybody needing a bit more in order to do the thing that's really magical. And so I do wonder about both the vulnerability that creates once you've revealed that data, do you have a way to pull it back? But also then the switching costs that just get higher and higher and higher the longer you've spent feeding your data into one entity as a consumer, where that entity now knows you so well, you almost can't leave it. And so the dependency that that creates, I realize that's not exactly security, but I do think that notion of access and the ability to walk away is going to be challenged in the coming years, as we just see how critical these systems are. I'll say, if I've had a couple times lost or broken a phone, and I replace it within 12 hours, like that's about how long I can last. And that's just, that's, I would say, just a phone. I think AI may actually be a level where we become even needier for that tool to enable our lives.
So we're kind of winding down our time together. So John, you had used the word prediction. And so it's safe to say that we could predict that data and security is going to be a big consideration this year, as we're kind of looking forward to the rest of the year. Are there any other predictions that you have in terms of considerations or next steps that you feel are imminent for the application of these agents?
I think this technology is rapidly advancing. It's going to continue to rapidly advance. I think the amount of effort being put in operationalizing platforms and components that make this stuff even easier, even faster to move, I think the offerings here are going to accelerate. And I think you're going to see a lot of really interesting things become very quick to implement and utilize. I think by way of that, you're also going to see people experimenting a lot and starting to put more things out in the market that play with these technologies in a way that consumers can directly use them. I think that's going to accelerate quite a bit this year. I think you're going to see, and you'll see probably a lot of good and probably a lot of bad of both. We'll see a lot of people, I guess just something I've noticed is that the word AI lapped onto things has accelerated even when it doesn't feel like it's actually merited. So I think that isn't going away anytime soon. I think that's going to accelerate. And I think that this sort of like the AI or the generative AI, you know, experience arms race or the agent arms race, I think is getting kicked off. And I think you're going to start to see a lot of movement in this space this year. And I think there'll also still be a lot of big pivots and shifts because this stuff is just moving so quick and advancing so fast. I think for me, even to say what like 3 months looks like is kind of a big jump in my mind, just given how quickly things are moving.
So I think that, you know, yes, things are moving really quickly. And so when I think of like, what areas am I excited about investing in that relate to this inevitable trend, this category, which is going to change our lives and our world, both in the short and for sure in the long term, I get really interested about how can you implement these technologies most efficiently. So one example that I'm very interested in right now related to AI agents is there technology that just like shadows me or shadows me plus my personal assistant or executive assistant, whoever's the most relevant of like my day-to-day operational flows, or even just as I'm shopping on a website, et cetera, and starts to see and learn the behaviors. And so without me having to program, it's not even no code. It's like mindless ability to like map and mirror aspects and behaviors and then to implement these kind of agents that, you know, would let me move faster with my time. That's like one example that I think I'm bullish on of like faster ways to get some of this technology implemented and showcasing the benefits that don't require as much input time from a given user.
I'll share really quickly, Jenny, I love that you brought up the example of shadowing. That's something that we're building right now and thinking about really deeply. The piece of advice I'll share is it's great to read and learn and watch and take in information. But when it comes to AI, as John was saying, it's changing so quickly. We don't know what the next few weeks and months are going to hold. So the best thing that I think that you can do is really explore and experiment. Use these new products. See what they're capable of them. Go into it without expectations and push them to the edge and see how they might be able to help you. And then once you've spent time doing that, start thinking about really specific places within your workflow, within your products, within your brand, where you can start incorporating those products and experiences. And at the end of the day, as with everything, just keep your user in mind, right? Don't, as we've said a few times, put AI on, slap AI onto something for the sake of getting on the hottest trend. Actually use it in a way to add value to your user, and different users and different products are going to respond differently to AI.
What I love and what all of you are saying in many ways is just that the human still matters and that the human's at the center of all of this. And I heard a talk recently, I actually went to a conference where multiple talks actually brought up the same number, which was 70% of the work to be done when you develop and work with AI is actually the human part, right? There's an algorithm part, there's a technology part, but then there's the human part. And that idea of 70% feels right to me, you know, and what I've been appreciating as we've kind of rounded the corner into 2024 is it does feel like that aspect of thinking about the implications for humans, but also how do you bring people along and how do you really make lives better? For me, as you know, UXer and at a place like Huge where we think of human-centered design in all things, this feels right that we actually need those voices advocating for human-centeredness in all that we do right now.
Well, I actually think that's a perfect place to end up. So thank you all so much. This was an amazing conversation. So many good insights and just really wonderful. So thank you all again for being here. Much appreciated. And thank you so much to all of our listeners. Of course, if you liked this podcast, please do subscribe on your favorite player. In addition to be available on all the usual suspects, this podcast is also available on intelligence.interpublic.com with a trove of other thought leadership and forward thinking from around the Interpublic Network. Bye for now.
Thank you for listening to the Collective Intelligence Podcast. For more marketing insights and ideas, please subscribe to this podcast or visit intelligence.interpublic.com.